It's also recording, and we'll see again how it'll go, whether it crashes or not. So please download the latest R codes. I made few adjustments a few hours ago. They're not so big adjusted, but basically it's corrected some typos. So please download the latest R code, then load the libraries needed, and then set the working directory. Session tab, and set the working directory and find the right place. So we have three questions. In the first, we're examining nonlinearities using interaction terms. We're using this already familiar currencies data set that contains the euro, British pound, and Japanese yen rate against US dollar. And the data is daily and runs almost 20 years. So first of all, let's go into the A part, download the data, and then we are asked to take the log transformation and use percentages. Let's do that, and then let's transform this series into time series and take the differences. And then we're asked to study stationarity in levels, stationarity of the series. So we'll begin, or first we'll do some plotting before the unit root test. Let's plot the series. Okay, so in every series, the USD is as a denominator, meaning that if the series is going downwards, it means that the currency is appreciating against the US dollar, and if it's getting upwards, it's depreciating. And on the left-hand side, we have a scaling of the euro and British pound, and on the right-hand side, the Japanese yen. Euro and British pound they're behaving quite similarly, although their pricing is not the same, but the currencies correlate quite strongly. And then the Japanese yen seems to be quite weak early on, and then it is appreciating around 2010, and then it's depreciating again. So let's start study this series more in detail, and let's look at the unit roots. In the first series, we have the log of the euro, meaning when we are using logarithm, we are using percentage scaling and not the linear scaling like in the case that we haven't taken the transformation. So here we have a percentage scaling And when we're testing a unit root, our null is that we have a unit root in a series. So then let's look at the test statistics and compare them to the critical values. So in both cases, we see that neither of the series is significant at the 5% level. So this implies that the null stays in power and we have a unit root in the series. And the same for the British bound. Also here, the null is, we have a unit root compared to test statistics with the critical value. In both cases, the null stays in power, we have a unit root. And the same result is also with the gen. So we have, in the level data, each series has a unit root. So then let's, before we start to testing the returns, let's plot the return series. Look how the returns are, returns, that is, differences are behaving. Although it looks a little messy, please just ignore the other, concentrate on the right color in each series, so red and green. So we see that from every series that each series has a volatility clustering and there are strong outliers. For one, look at the September, August 2008, and you'll see a huge volatility there. So overall, we see that, and then there are other cases that in the British bound, we'll see immediately what's the date when the Brexit happened, and then we'll see the same during the COVID-19 volatility spike. So overall, we see that the volatility is not constant. It is changing, varying over time, meaning sometimes it's smaller and sometimes larger. And then there are these, outlier events. But yeah, overall, each of the series seems to be mean reverting, and so it's going up, and it mean reverting around zero. So still, as we don't want to rely on just eyeballing, so let's check that there's a unit root in the series. So in the first case, let's test the difference of the Euro series. The null is that we have a unit root, and then compare the test statistics with the critical values. And in here we can see that the test statistic is rather high. So this means that we'll reject the null, and the alternative hypothesis stays in power, implying that our series is stationary. Also in the second case, we'll reject the null. So we have a stationary series. And in the third case, we reject the null, so we have a stationary series. And then we'll go into the B part. So we are asked to detect the best possible RMAP representation for each currencies. So let's use this auto-ARIMA function of the R and let it choose the optimal length. So first we'll test the optimal length of the Euro returns. And this says that the optimal model is ARMA 1.1. Let's keep that in mind, and let's check what's the case with the British returns. bound returns, and it also should be armor 1/1. And then also the same applies to the gen. So we have three time series, and we when we test their optimal length, in each case, it should be armor 0/0 process. So I might have said earlier, talk about the number one, but it should be, that was a mistake. So in each case, it should be armor 0/0. So this is a little bit surprising result. Please look at the graphs here on the right-hand side. So if this series would be just white noise, that implies that it has a constant, it should be normally distributed with the constant volatility. And you'll see immediately from these graphs that neither of the series, or to say it otherwise, each of the series has a time varying volatility, and then there are these outliers. So this would firmly suggest that thinking about this series as an armor 0/0 series is not that credible. It is most probably some other case. So from these outliers, we could think that outlier events so dominating that they're disturbing our information criteria. So here, we'll try two different models. We start our further research with two different models, and in the first case, let's look how our model is performing when we're using AR1 representation. That means that we are interested to study that, is there a daily persistence between the time points? And in the other case, we have an AR5 series, and this is about asking whether we have a weekly persistence in the time series. So first of all, let's run AR1 models. In the first case, it's about the euro returns, and let's check the results. And just for the refreshment, as the R doesn't give us the p value immediately, let's go that through one more time. So we have an estimate, and then secondly we have a standard error. So how the calculator t-test statistic in each case. So take the AR1 estimate and divide it by standard errors, and if the value exceeds the threshold rule of thumb threshold of 2, then reject the null, and meaning to say it otherwise, then if it exceeds the threshold of 2, we have a statistically significant coefficient. So here, if we look at the first case, AR1 representation, so we'll see immediately that the null stays in power, so it is not significant, and the same also applies to the intercept. So in this case, in the euro returns, the AR1 rule doesn't seem to add that much. So let's look at the British pound. Take the AR1 and divide it by the standard error. So here it's around 1.7. So it might be significant at the level of the 10%. So let's check that. Yes, it's significant at the level of the 10%, but not at the level of the 5%. So there's some weakly significance. So that's not a strong result. So Also here, the AR1 representation doesn't seem to add much, but at least it is a little bit better result as the with the euro returns. And lastly, let's check the Japanese yen returns. And here we actually might have a significant. So in the last case, we actually do have a significant AR1 coefficient, but the intercept is not significant. So from the AR1 representation, in each case, the intercept is almost really almost zero, and then only in the case of Japanese yen we have a significant AR1 coefficient. So just for the case of comparison, let's see what's the case with AR1 modeling. So you should be able to do the calculations here on your own now. So in each case, we'll see when we divide the estimate by its standard errors that the coefficient is not significant. So AR5 representation doesn't bring that much. The case of euro returns. And then we'll look at pound returns. And we have a similar result as earlier. Our AR1 coefficient seems to be just the same as earlier. So we've already done the calculation in that case. So here the AR1 coefficient is significant at level of 10%, but there's not. But the other lags don't bring that much. And then let's look at the chain. And again, we have the same result. So here, the result is the same as earlier. That in chain returns, we have a. Our first AR1 length is significant, but there's nothing else. So there seems to be some hints that there's something in the AR1 representation. So let's continue with that length. But as the intercept was non-significant in every case and almost zero, so let's exclude that from our model. So in the next part, as we can see from this plot that we have these huge outliers events here, so let's in the C part try to start to controlling these outlier events. And to check and here are already taken given the events that are the strong highest. So for example, in the case of so just by using this, you'll see the maximum event here, or in other ways you could also try using max or min. You'll see what's the most strongest event in the series. So. And here you have to add this if you don't add this two from two till n to the square brackets, you're in trouble because the first observation of the series is ni. So you remember to take that into account. And it's most probably because the series is, yeah, this is, it's an atomic series, so that's so this is related to technicalities of the R code. So just for the sake of practicalities, remember to look if you have non-existent values in the series and exclude them from the series you're interested in. So first of all, when we've taken given that we've checked the maximum and minimum, the highest changes in the each of the series, in the euro USD dollar series, the most significant return date is related to the 18th of March 2009, and that was the day when the Federal Reserve announced its QE1 program. So this resulted in the appreciation of the euro against the US dollars. So basically, said informally, Fed started to print more money, so that's why the currency started to deprice. US dollars started to depreciate. But more interesting detail is related to the international cooperation of the central banks during this time. And before this date, the Bank of England announced its own QE program on the 4th of March 2009. So there was an international as the financial markets were about to collapse, central banks started to internationally cooperate and doing. Everyone started their own quantitative easing program. And if we look at the level data, this is the level data here. So here, look around the beginning of the 2009 here, you'll start to see that so this actually just appreciation the US dollar, meaning that's related to the financial crisis, and that was the time when international financial markets were short of US dollars. So all around the globe, everyone was missing US dollars, and that's why its demand was increasing. And this time, central banks were swapping, Fed was swapping US dollars to other major central banks of the world. And these other four, the most significant central banks of the world, are the Federal Reserve, Bank of England, European Central Bank, and Bank of Japan. Then there are these minor central banks that are also important, like the Swiss Central Bank, famous Swiss interest bank UBS, and what was the name of this other famous Swiss investment bank. They were huge international players before the break of the financial crisis. So Swiss bank is a minor central bank, but also important. And Australian dollar is also an important currency. It's another safe haven currency in the global markets. But from here on, Yep. Afterwards, yes, here when the Fed starts to print more money, starts its QE, and the currency starts then the here around to beginning 2009, the US dollar start to depreciating again, and the other currencies increase their values. Let's put the returns here because we might need them further. So that was one event, important event, and as already talked about earlier, one in the case of the British pound, the Brexit referendum was a huge event. Markets were expecting that Britain would stay in the European Union, but the expectation was wrong, and then after the Brexit, the pound collapses. And then the third series is a Chen series, and after the actually it's let's use the level data here, which it's easier to look at the graphs here. So look at the green graph. Around 2008, Chen start to really strongly appreciate, and this appreciates really strongly many years from there on. Before it starts to depreciate again. So, and this depreciation is related to the Abenomics. Abe was chosen as a Japanese prime minister 2013, and he had this three arrow program. So it was basically Japanese central bank buying the Japanese government bonds, and then central bank was printing quantitative easing like crazy, like buying ETFs, basically buying stocks from the stocks markets, buying everything possible it could just buy. And then the third part of the program was some structural changes, but I can't recall about the structural changes anymore. Most probably they didn't never happen because the politicians are not able to run their programs. But around October 27th of the October 2008, that's the most significant date in the Chen series, and that was the date when the G7 singles out the Chen and warned that there could be some volatility coming on. So Chen was really strongly appreciating, and then when the G7 gave its warning, the Japanese yen just fell. And yes, actually it's the other way around. We have to use max operator here. So on a single day, the yen lost 6% of its values as the G7 singled out it. So we've separated three outlier singular dates here, and let's then form a dummy variable and control these dates. What this if-else operation means is that first of all, we'll set the command what we want to test, perform a logical test on a command, and here it's the date. Here is the date in question, and if the date is true, it will be given the value of 1, and if it's not true, it'll be given the value of 0. So that singles out the day. So first, let's look at the QE1 announcement of the Federal Reserve. So here we excluded the intercept, include mean is false, so we've excluded the intercept from the model. There's some mention about the ML, but that's unnecessary because our model is here linear, so this is the AR1 representation without the intercept, and the value is it's the same as with the intercept, so it is not significant. And then let's control the QE1 announcement. So here the AR1 representation is also not significant, insignificant, but if we look at the QE1 announcement, so meaning take the estimate and divide it by its standard errors, and its value is over 4, so it's really strongly significant result. So we've detected one outlier effect that affects strongly to the series, but if we compare this AR1 estimate with the estimate without the outlier event, we'll see that the estimate is around the same. So there's a robustness in the estimate, and this means that as we've added the outlier into the model, it doesn't affect the AR1 part. But still, the AR1 is not significant. But we've detected one outlier event that seems to be really important in the series. So then, secondly, let's look at the Brexit referendum and how it'll affect the series. I run the both lines at the same time so we can compare them immediately. And here we have a really interesting result. So look at the model above here. So here we have a coefficient that's significant at the level of the 10%. So there's some weakly statistic significance. And then as we add the Brexit referendum, the value of the AR1 length, the estimate say changes, but this estimate of the Brexit referendum is really huge. So this is so huge estimate that it has to be the case that this Brexit is dominating the data. It's really, really affecting. If we keep the Brexit referendum in the data, it'll affect every other estimation. So this would, because it's so extreme effect, it could be well be the case that maybe we should smoothen the series and leave this event out of the series when we're doing the estimations, so that it will not mess every one observation is not messing everything, every other estimation in the model. So here we could just smoothen our data and calculate the probability distribution and like use the values of the and skip all the values after the null 99.995 after that value. So smoothen a little bit the series and then take a look how that will affect the other estimations. But here, what is important is that Brexit is dominating the data, and here the effect is so dominating that it will most probably mess every other estimation if it's included in the data. And then let's look at the G7 warning and compare the results. So here again, without the controlled event, we have a significant AR1 lag. And then when we control the event, it will actually still be significant. It's a little bit less than 2. So yeah, so it's still above the 1.94. So AR1 representation still seems to be significant, and the outlier event is also significant. That is around 9s. Actually, it's around 10. So the outlier event is really strong there, strongly significant. But still, we saw here that when we added this outlier event, that our AR1 estimate became smaller, but it still stayed significant. So this begs a question: that do these shocks change the mean equation permanently? So we are now in the D part. So let's make an assumption that after these events, that there's a permanent change, structural change in the series. So this means that after this date, all the let's create a dummy variable that activates after this date, after the date in question. So it's one after the date we've chosen. So let's create these dummy variables and then create the interaction term by multiplying this dummy variable with the euro, with the return series in question in each case. And then let's check the euro returns with the interaction term. And we are excluding the mean from the intercept from the equation. So again, so now when we are controlling the dummy variable, we are using the interaction term in the series. So we'll see that in the euro returns, our AR1 becomes significant. The value is around 2.5, so it might even exceed the threshold of 1%. It's just a little bit over 2. That's not 2.56. That's the limit, a threshold of 1%. So it's still moderately statistically significant. So AR1 is moderately statistically significant representation here. And then our interaction term is really strongly significant. That's the D-stat is like almost 80 or something like that. So just loosely interpreting what this means. After the interaction, when the Fed began its quantitative easing, the euro has weakened since. When we add these interaction terms, it's loosely interpreted that the euro, look at the blue line here, the euro starts to depreciating against the US dollar. So when the blue line is going upwards, euro is weakening against the dollar. Then let's look at the Brexit pound series with the Brexit interaction term. And the AR1 is insignificant, so there's nothing much to add, but the interaction term seems to be really strongly significant. So looking at the red line in the plot, we could just loosely interpret it as that Brexit has affected the valuation of the British pound, implying that it has weakened ever since, but there's no overall persistence in the series. And then the last series with the gen returns, and we're controlling the time period after the October 2008. So here from the AR1 estimate, dividing it by its standard errors, we'll see that AR1 part is rather strongly functional, meaning that there's strong persistence in the between the time points of the series, and then the G7 announcement was strongly significant. And here's written that since 2008, Zen has weakened, so that's actually so loosely interpreted that that doesn't make any sense. I'll remove that one because that's not the case. So it's rather the Abenomics that has affected the depreciation of the Zen series, and that happened 2013. So what we did earlier on the modeling wise was when we used this dummy variables and interaction variables is that on modeling wise, we assumed that these events were exogenous, meaning that they were given from the outside, or to say it in another way, they were not in the expectations of the market participants so at the time they were announced. And as this assumption is a rather weak modeling assumption, because usually the financial markets are forward looking, they're always trying to guess what's happening in the future, because that's the way they're boosting their returns, try to find some edge related to the other market participant by guessing the future, right? So modeling wise, we assumed that these events were exogenous, and that's when we think about the real financial markets, that's a rather weak assumption. So let's then start to take the expectations of the market more better into account. So meaning that we are now endogenizing these structural changes in the series. So this implies that there were somehow these events were in the expectations of the markets, and they were in the series earlier. So here now we are analyzing the endogeneity of these structural changes, how they are happening in this series. So in the E part, we are constructing this new series of the British pound euro series based on the triangular arbitrage conditions, and then we are performing the similar analysis as earlier. So triangular arbitrage, so this means that when we are calculating the British pound euro series using other currencies, this is based on a theoretical assumption that there are no arbitrage between the three currencies, and triangular arbitrage is a arbitrage strategy that currency traders are using. So to date, it's normally done by algorithms. If you have a really fast algorithm that can catch these arbitrage differences in the series, that, for example, euro, you have three currencies: euro, British pound, and US dollar. So if each of these currencies is priced against each other, there could be some discrepancies between the pricing and implying immediate arbitrage opportunities. So these arbitrage opportunities could be there like 1/10 of the second, and if you are using really fast algorithm, it could catch the make immediate make profit without risk. So here we are assuming that there's not such a thing in a series. So this is a theoretical assumption, and if we want to check more in detail the robustness of this result, we have to download the actual Euro British pound series. But here we are making this theoretical construct. So let's calculate the series, then take the log returns, transform this to time series. And these are the quantiles of the series, 20% returns. So overall, we see that positive, there's it is asymmetric. The series is asymmetric. Actually, this isn't a good representation because the null is missing, and we're comparing. Is this, yeah, now it looks better. So yeah, it's better to add null there so that we have also an extreme event on the not a, on the opposite tail. So comparing this, there's some symmetry in the series, but the extreme effects are asymmetric with respect to the other quantiles. So then let's calculate the median here. I'll have to check that. Is that really? Yeah, it should be median, but just for the case that I'm sure, let's check the help. And then it seems it crashed. I asked R to calculate the median, so better interrupt that. So it should be median. It should be median. I would have just checked it to be 100% certain that it's not mean, but when we're using quantiles, it should be median. When the function is about quantiles, it should be median. So then let's take the, yeah, so we calculated this medium value, and then we're comparing the returns and this median, meaning that if our returns are higher than the median return, we'll have a dummy variable that activates, and if it's below the median, it's not activated, so it's zero in that case. And then, yeah, we'll form this interaction term. In this line, we're calculating the interaction term, multiplying this dummy when it's activated with the 10 returns. So then let's run study 10 returns using this interaction term as a independent variable. And when we add this this interaction term is hugely significant, but the AR1 length is no longer significant in the series. So previously, without this interaction term, we had a significant AR1 part, but here is no longer significant. So loosely interpreting this as the euro is weakening above its median value against the British pound, it has a weakening effect also on the value of the yen against the US dollar. So implicitly, US dollar is used as a denominator in each series. We calculated this euro pound series just by using the US dollar as a denominator in both series. And then this is added into October 2008 event, and I'll remove that line. That cannot be the case, that it's the weakening of the yen. It's related only to the era after October 2008. Then, secondly, let's add another event to the previous regression. So here we are adding the structural change into the regression also. So this is interesting. AR1 part is insignificant, median comparison effect is again highly significant, and again it seems to be the case that the structural change after the October 2008 in the meaning the T7 warning has a really significant effect on the yen afterwards. If we look at here this plot, and we'll see this green lines us getting first downwards and then upwards, and then we think about this October 2008 events, it doesn't feel that credible thing that something really, really drastic happened in the during the October 2008. Yeah, in every case, we can conclude that the weakening is associated with the shocks, meaning these outlier events in the series, although we might not capture in this the really economically, and to repeat again, economically significant outlier events. But then the AR1 representation is no longer significant. So overall, we could conclude from this that this outlier, there's lots of things happening in this series, and I mentioned something about Abenomics and its effect since 2013, but then there's something really strong. We'll see from comparing the 2013 and 2015 that this values quickly increasing around 20%, and then it stays flat like 1.5 years, and then there's again huge depreciation afterwards. So probably around 2015, January 2015 or end of the 2000. Okay, actually end of the 2014, that during 2014 the Fed was tapering its quantitative easing program. So during 2014, the Federal Reserve tapered its quantitative easing from 100 billion per month to zero at the end of the year, and this actually correlates with the flat part of the series, and then announced at the end of the 2014 that it'll start increasing its interest rates. So in a sense of market expectation, this would mean that when the markets are expecting that the US securities starts to pay better international yield, it'll also boost the value of the US dollars, and the yen starts to depreciate against the US dollar. But overall, there are lots of things happening in the international financial markets. Then there are some plots. Okay, here is the pound euro series and the yen US dollar series. From this series, we'll see the first part of the series is we'll see in the, till around 2000, beginning 2008, the pound euro and the Japanese yen against US dollar, they're moving in tandem. So this is the period. During the last exercise session or demo sessions, I mentioned about the deviations of the covered interest rate parity. So without going into theory in more detail, I'll add it here the name of the article from the Dudepper Verdenhall from the Journal of Finance. This was the period when this theoretical relationship still hold it, and it had held since 1970s. But since the 2008, this theoretical relationship has no longer hold in the international financial market. And this covered interest rate parity is about relationships of the currencies and the money markets. So in 2008, there's a structural change happening. And then the series will are not moving in no longer in tandem like earlier. Then there's another plot. Let's check that one. Okay, these are the return series. Yeah. So here we are comparing the return series. So overall, just comparing volatile events, the volatilities of this series, the series seem to be volatility seems to be around the same in the same in the both series, so meaning that when the volatility is lower, it is lower in the both series, and when it's higher, it is higher in the both series. Although there's a Brexit referendum in June 2016, that's the huge spike in the euro, British pound. And then there's this COVID-19 volatility shocks again. But overall, let's just loosely say that I said it already many times, but there's some structural changes in happening in the yen, but not so strong changes in the euro series. So I think that was the first exercise, and then the second exercise, and I'll soon hand this to Alexandra, but I'll say this first. So the second exercise is about threshold autoregressive modeling, and here a part is already a part we did in the previous exercise. So we used here at the beginning AR1 coefficient and compared that with the AR5 coefficient. So we've already done that A part, and the B part. The B part is easier to show using Stata. If I try to show that using R, we would most likely just have to wait a few minutes of time performing each estimate, because SETAR modeling is really slow using R. So overall, my suggestion is that Alexandra will show you the second exercise here using Stata, and then we'll have some break. Let's see that a little bit later. But second exercise and then some break, and then we'll... Then let's do the last exercise, the third one.
Yep. But I will start with the first question and stay there, because there are some new things I wanted to show.
Please share your screen. Thank you.
Yep. So, yeah, let's start with the first question and stay there. Here. Like as usual, importing the data and declaring the data set to be time series data set. Then we're calculating the levels of series here. And here we're generating the first differences. And here is the plot. It looks exactly the same as in R. Yeah, that's how it looks. And I want to say that in this way, I think Stata has a relative advantage over R, because like the same graph in R, it requires you to write 6 or 7 lines of codes. And here it's just like it's that easy. It's just like you write two way, and then you specify the y and x axis, and then if you want the Japanese yen to be shown on as a different as a on the second axis, you just after the comma you have to specify y axis and then two, meaning that Japanese yen series are scaled on this right y axis. Here again, everything is like the same. The augmented Dickey Fuller test for the log levels of the series. And then also a very convenient feature in Stater, if we want to plot log returns, we can do it separately just by specifying line and then the name of the variable we want to plot. And then you can specify the color after comma. This one is blue. And the name of the graph also. Let's run it. Why is it not running? Okay. It already exists because I have run this code before. So let's give it a different name. So yeah, here is the graph for the differences of the euro dollar returns, and then two other graphs separately. And if you want to see them in one window, you can just write graph combine, and then the names of the graphs you want to combine, and then after comma you have to specify the number of rows to tell the stater how do you want it to like look like. Here I do it in three rows. Let's run it. Yeah. And this is the same graph as that in R. In R, it also requires, I think, more lines of code than here. I think around 7, but here it's just like four. And here is the Dickey Fuller test for the log returns. And then the part of code for the ARMA modeling. Again, in this case, I would say R is a bit more convenient because there is the option of automatic log selection. Here you instead you have to do to make a hypothesis about the log structure based on the autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation functions. And here we're running the R1 and R5 models for different return series. Regarding the dummy variables, that's how it looks. That's how the code looks like in Stater. If you want to introduce the dummy variable for separate date, so here you have to make the date equal to the date. Then it means that for 19th of March 2009, the value of this of this variable will be equal to 1. And in all other times, the value will be set to 0. And here, like as usual, when you're running a RIM model, you first specify the variable that you are trying to explain, and it is followed by the variables that are trying to explain. This, in this case, Euro return series. And if you want to include the constant, then you have to delete this part, but there is here also an option here to exclude the constant of the model. And if you want to introduce the dummy variable on 19th of March 2009 and thereafter, then that's how the code looks like. You are generating the dummy variable, that's the name for it. And in the brackets, you have to specify that the date is more or equal to 19th of March 2009. Generating the intersection terms is also very easy. Just have to give the name to it and then just like multiply the variables that you want to introduce to your model. And then here the new ARMA models, nothing new. And for the median dummy variable, here the value is taken from the summary statistics of this variable. Let's run it. Yeah, and here is the variable, the value of the median for this variable, 50%. Just can easily like copy it and then paste here. This will mean that the values of this variable will be equal to 1 in case if the values of this variable are more than the median value. And yeah, as usual, you can also add the median dummy variables to the model just by specifying it after the variable which you are trying to explain. And here are some plotting. Yeah, that's how it looks here. A little bit, again, crowded on the x-axis, but you can always change it through this graph editor. And here's some more graph. I think here I have to change it a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it's not happening for some reason. Okay. Here, I missed it. Okay, it's because we used it earlier, so I'm going to replace 1 by 2. Yeah, and finally here is the Bravo. The combined version for the differences of Japanese yen returns and also for the returns of pound to euro. Okay, now we can come to the question two. So, as you have said that we already discussed this R1 and R5 model in the previous questions, but let's do it once again using Stata. Here's some plotting, and here is the R1 model for the Japanese yen returns. Yep, and here we can see that the constant in the model is not significant, but the first lag of the Japanese returns is significant. And let's compare it with the R5 model. Yep. Yeah, the if we take more than one leg for the R part, then the constant still stays insignificant here. The first leg is still significant, but other lags except the fourth lag are all insignificant. So meaning that there is not much sense to over parameterize the model, because these are excess lag which do not help to explain the dynamics of the Japanese yen return series. And yeah, here is the B part about self-exciting threshold autoregressive models. In Stata, this module is has like more functionality if compared to R. Stata is more advanced in this module. So in here, we're estimating the self-excise hold after aggressive model for the dollar Japanese currency returns. Here is the code, and to activate this setter model, first you have to write the command threshold. Then it's followed by the variable that you are trying to explain, in our case, the Japanese return series. After the comma, you are first have to specify the threshold option. It basically specifies the threshold variable that you are you want to use in your model, and then trim option specifies that threshold treat the value at the some percentile of the threshold variable as the first possible threshold. And if you will try to do the same thing in WinRATS, then to unify the results with WinRATS is using the 15 percentile by default. But you can always like change it and think about how you can like specify it in another way and like play with the model a little bit. And then region bars option specifies variables under different regimes. And if we want to over parameterize the R path for the Japanese written series, then here we're specifying 5 flags of the Japanese return series and 1 lakh for the threshold effect. Also very convenient is in Stater, you can store the results of the model, and later if you want to compare different specifications of the models to compare their quality, you can just run this line of code, but I'll come to that later. So first of all, let's estimate setter model with 1 lakh of Japanese return series at the threshold variable, and let's use 5 flags for the R part. Let's run it. Yeah, and see here you see it starts to search for the threshold. It can take some time. It's currently running around 3,000 regressions. Yeah, we're almost there. 2,900, 3,000. Yep. And here is the setter model. Regarding the reporting, here we see the name, the threshold regression, the sample that is using, the number of thresholds we specified, the threshold variable, the information criteria of the model, the value of the threshold variable, the data calculated. And here is the table, here is the report of the regression questions under two different regimes. And already here we can see that actually, if for the first regime, the lakhs of the Japanese yen series are, some lakhs are significant, like the first one, second, and fourth and fifth. For the second regime, it does not give such good estimates, because all the lakhs are basically insignificant. So let's try to run the setter model using 1 lakh for the R part, and let's leave 1 lakh also for the threshold effect. Let's run it. Yeah, here it starts to calculate. Searching for the threshold value, and here we can see that the threshold value has not changed much, but we got rid of this unnecessary lags, and in this way, this model is better, but still under first regime, we can see that the first lakh is significantly different from zero, but under second regime, it's still, it is not significant. And now, let's try to think whether this threshold model is at all relevant in this case, because we are not getting very good results under the second regime, and maybe there is no need of the threshold at all. For those purposes, in Statum, there is an option of automated number of threshold selection. So for that, you have to specify this additional option. And this number means the maximum number of threshold you allow your model to have. It can be like more, like it might be like 5 and 7. It doesn't matter much. So let's do it for the set R with 5 flags in R part first. Let's run it. It starts to search for the threshold. Yeah, a little bit slow. And yeah, first like it's looking for one threshold and then for two thresholds, or and then as we specified the maximum value of thresholds to 3, then it will also try to identify 3 thresholds, 3 different regimes, first 2 different regimes, 3 different regimes, and 4 different regimes. And then just want to show once, and I think we shouldn't waste our time on running them again and again. I will just briefly discuss the results. Yep, finally. So yeah, here is the result of automatic threshold selection. And as we can see that actually Stata could not find any reasonable threshold value for this data, meaning that this threshold models are actually not relevant in this case. Here I'm doing the same, but with 1 lug under 2 regimes. And here the results actually are a bit better because Stata manages to find the one threshold for this kind of specification. But we still should remember that when we try to introduce the threshold variable like manually, it didn't give good results because under the second regime, the first lack of Japanese return series was not significant. Yep, and this time it was really fast, and number of threshold is equal to 1. But still, you can see that this coefficient is not statistically significant, meaning that this is not good and this is not right model for this series. And then here I'm also running the threshold auto-regressive models with the pound to euro return series at the threshold variable. And here the, let's run it. Let's see what's going on here. So first let's specify 5 lakhs under two regimes. Yep. So here we can say that if we introduce, if we change the threshold variable from first lakh of return series to first lakh of pound to euro return series, then we're getting the threshold value becomes a little bit lower. And if we look at the regression equations, on the first regime, we can see that the first lakh, third lakh, and fifth lakh are significant, but second and fourth lakhs are insignificant. And under second regime, only 2 lakhs are significant, meaning that these are not like very good results because we apparently like over parameterized the module, which is not good. And here try to predict the so basically this line of the codes is calculating the estimated by this model values of Japanese return series. And here I'm trying to plot them both estimated and actual return series on one graph, and we cannot see actually nothing much here. Let's skip this graph. It's not very representative. Let's skip this result of the estimation of this model is tar 5, and then again we can estimate tar model with the pound euro return as a threshold variable and one lag of Japanese return series included under two different regimes. Let's run it. Yep. And yeah, like changing the, this basically means that changing the threshold variable from first lakh of Japanese return series to first lakh of a British pound to euro return series, it changes the threshold from negative to positive value. But still, we can see that under the second regime, the the coefficient of the first lock of the Japanese return series is not significant. And this means that this model is not of a very good quality, because it contains excessive variables that are not helping to explain the actuals we are trying to explain. And again, here, like, we can also try this automated number of threshold selection option. I don't want to run it now because it will take, again, lots of time, but you can try it on your own, and you will see that the stator will not succeed to find any threshold value, meaning that neither the self-exciting threshold autoregressive model nor threshold autoregressive model are good specifications for for Japanese return series. And just wanted to show you that if in case you get some good results, it's very convenient here in Stata to compare the models. It will just give you the table with the information criteria, and like it's very easy than if you have, I don't know, let's say more than 5 models, or like, I don't know, 10 models, to find the best one with the minimal values of the information criteria. And the question is was that if self-exciting threshold autoregressive model and threshold autoregressive model are not good for this series, maybe we could try the nonlinear specifications of these threshold models. And one specification is logistic self-exciting threshold autoregressive model. In Stata, there are lots of user created modules, and to estimate how the logistic smooth transition works for Japanese return series, we have to first install this TSLS star mod. And I want to show you how to do that. Let's copy it, and then you go to help, search. Here in the keywords you specify TSLS star mod, okay. And here it tells you that one package is found, and it gives a brief description of it. So it's written module. This module is to estimate a logistic smooth transition autoregressive regression model for time series data. And if you click on it, it will give you even more description, and the author also. And I already installed it, but if you have not, you have to click here to install. Yeah, and here it basically it's tell me that all files already exist and are up to date, so like I can now use this module. It's very easy to use this module. You just specify the command, the TSLS star mod, then the variable you are trying to explain, comma, and then in the option press V, you have to specify the variable you want to use, the threshold variable. And let's run it, for the pound euro return series at the threshold variable. And yeah, we do not succeed to get the model which converges. So Stata is saying that could not find feasible values, meaning that basically non-linear specification of threshold model is also not working here. But let's try to specify the threshold variable as the first lack of the Japanese return series. Maybe that will work. But no, again, the log likelihood is not calculated and it couldn't find feasible values. So yeah, this means that neither linear specification of threshold regression models nor the non-linear specification work for this series. Also, there is a very good article, Escobari star models and Stata, and here the author, I hope you can see the, yep, you can see the screen, this article, and here the author is basically using non-linear command estimating the, and the author estimating the L star model by specifying the initial values of the coefficients, and here there are two different specifications of these nonlinear models with different parameters of smoothness and the coefficients. But if we try to run it, yeah, Stata will say you that starting values invalid or some variables have missing values. Meaning that most probably the initial values are not zeros, how it's specified here. That's why it cannot find a good model, but it's really hard to find good initial values, and it's even discussed down here. Yep. Unfortunately, the nonlinear least squares procedure in Stata does not always find the maximum, and the results are really sensitive to the initial values. So overall, the conclusion of this question is that neither the linear specification of threshold model or non-linear specification of threshold model, they are not relevant for Japanese yen series. So that you have to dig deeper and think maybe about Markov switching models or some other specifications you can apply to the series so that you succeed in explaining the dynamics of the Japanese yen. So yeah, and now I stop sharing the screen, and I think now Yuhamati will continue with their
thanks. So like Alexandra just said, the point of the second exercise was that to show that the threshold models are not the right framework for the modeling. So next, let's try Markov switching, and then let's finish this session. So next we'll have a 15-minute break, and let's continue 15 past. So see you soon. So let's continue.
Yep.
So last part of the last demo session. So unfortunately, you have to wait still about 1.5 hour and then you're able to go out. It's a really beautiful day and I hoped I could go out, but unfortunately today I have to be babysitting, and meaning that there are no luxuries for me today. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't go out. So the last exercise says, last demo, the third question. It's about Markov switching modeling. So we ended the second exercise, threshold models, into a conclusion that wasn't a valid framework for our modeling. So let's next ask whether it is the case that we have different thresholds there. So first of all, I'll just have to calculate some values. This is for the case that if I wouldn't repeat these calculations, there could be some problems with the R. So it's just the sake of the security. So first of all, in the A part, we take as a given that AR1 is the model of the choice. Before that, let's plot some values again. So here, this is the same graph as earlier. So here you'll see that yen USD, US dollar and bound euro series move in tandem till 2007-08, and then these relationships breaks up and series start to drift. You could for example test that if there's a whether these series are still co-integrated, it's one possibility, but we're not doing that here. So the second series, well, this is about returns. So again, you'll see here the volatility clustering and the outlier events, and it seems to be the case that the volatility of the both series is time varying, meaning not constant. So now next, let's check in the threshold modeling. We try to find that if it is the case that if the some threshold is we're getting over some threshold that we're getting over some threshold and there's a small problem here. So now I have some problem. My daughter just came here and well, I'll just a moment. I'll have to mute this mic for a while. So unfortunately, she will not want to leave. So I'll just have to dig a little bit deeper so that I can concentrate. She is disturbing my work. So next in the threshold modeling, we were looking to case that if we exceed some value, whether some threshold activates. So it seemed that isn't the case. So next, let's try regime switching. That if the volatility exceeds some. Or it's another way, another. But let's next check that whether we have different regimes for the volatilities, that there are times of high volatility and times of lower volatility. So first, let's regress the yen returns on euro pound returns. These summary stats are not important. They're used at the Markov switching modeling. So here, look at this function. MS fit is our function. This is the object we put there. K here is the number of the regimes we want to specify. P is our AR parameter, meaning here that we're using AR1 parameter, and this is the some restrictions in the modeling. We have fourth restrictions here. In our first linear regression models, we had two independent variables. So in addition to the Eurobound return series, we also had a constant intercept in a series, so that's another variable. So, and then in addition, we have one AR length in our Markov switching model, so know how many arguments you need here. It's the number of the parameters in the linear model and plus then the number of the parameters in the AR parameters in the Markov switching model. So it's them plus one. So it's four in this case, two in the linear model and one in the Markov switching plus one. So hence we have to specify here four ASVI parameters and the control part we can skip here. Did I already run the Markov switching? No, I didn't. I should have, because it might take some moments to calculate it. Okay, another problem. My R just crashed, so I'll have to. It'll take some time. Oh, this is really horrible. But what can you do?
A lot of packages have to be installed.
Yes. So. This will take a few moments, a little more interruptions also. So let's take them. Let's load the packages and then I'll just run through the first exercise session. that's a little bit, that shouldn't take that long. Unfortunately, because I have to use the VPI connection from the university, it slows down the computer a little bit, so this is not that quick. And this is the reason why I usually load the libraries before the exercises, because as you can see, it's loading the forecast library. It has already taken some 30 seconds. This car package is probably also a little bit slower one. So already during these exercise sessions, I've had some problems already with the computers. This is the fifth session, and during the three out of four sessions earlier, my recording has failed. So it's good that Alexandra is also recording these demos, that some people who are working and checking these demos afterwards can have the possibility to view them overall. So this is really some negative externalities of the teleworking, but yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, nothing to do.
So now the libraries are there. This running this code is a little bit quicker. And then hopefully we'll have our print soon. If we're combining air with stata, the good thing about air is that it gives you really flexibility to do all kind of stuff, but you have to be, downside of this is that you have to be really, really careful with all the details you're doing. So it's no wonder that statisticians really love R, because they can do whatever they want. But if for example compared to stata, if you take that as a given, you don't know everything what's going on in the programming language. But yeah, now we got our results of the first model. So we run Markov switching model with one AR length, and we specified that we want two regimes. So let's start to check the results. So in the first regime, we'll see here that when we are regressive, returns of the Japanese yen. It doesn't specify the models, but earlier we were specifying our gen returns. We'll see here that the returns of the pound euro series seems to be strongly significant, so meaning strongly significant, and then also the AR1 parameter of the series is also moderately significant, moderately meaning here between 1% and 5% significance level. So it's moderately significant here. So first of all, these results support the first regime, but then let's check, and then our R squared is a little bit over 3%, so that's not much, but that's not much. What's the percentage of the variation that's explained by the model? But if we look at the second regime, we'll see that none of the coefficient is significant. Also, the variation explained is basically zero. So just by quick glance, it seems that the second there's no reason to add the second regime. Then let's look at our transition probabilities. So these are the Markov chain probabilities here. Mathematically, regime, let's assume regime is one, conditional that the regime is one is probability. So here in this case, B is that first value. So meaning conditional that we are on the earlier period in a regime one, earlier period is regime one. So the probability that the next period is also regime one is almost 95%. So here, as you look these regime columns, you'll see that they sum up to one. And also the same case with the regime two, that they sum up to two. So in a case that we would be in a previous be in the regime two, our probability would be like a little bit over 5% that it would switch into a regime one. So these high probability values means that the regimes in themselves are quite persistent. When one regime is on, it is unlikely that it'll switch into another regime. These stats don't report the unconditional probability, so that we could see what's the probability value of this regime over our whole sample, meaning that like is one regime 1/5 of the probability and another regime is 4/5. It doesn't report those stats here. So next, in the first regime, what is important here is AR1 length lag. So negative value here means that this regime represents the appreciation of the yen relative to the US dollar. So this is the appreciation regime of the yen. And actually the second regime is also appreciation regime. So it's no big wonder that this second regime doesn't seem to add anything. if the coefficient is positive, then it's then the valuation effect is negative, meaning depreciating. So then let's look at the smoothed and filtered probabilities. Ah, this looks really horrible. Hopefully you're able to get some. No, now it starts to look a little bit better. It's just horrible. What we are on the right hand side, we have these filter probabilities. So filter probabilities are these transitional probabilities here I talked earlier about. So it's the difference between the smoothed and filtered probabilities is that in the filtered probabilities, it's about the previous period. So if we are interested in the probability of t period conditional on the t minus one period, that's what filtered probabilities are about. The smoothed probabilities so the difference between filtered and smoothed probabilities is that filtered probabilities are backward looking, whereas the smoothed probabilities take also future values into account. So think of this as a representation of the expectations. So the filter probabilities are calculated using the whole sample. So here, the probability that we're at the regime one at the current time point is conditional on the regimes probability of the regimes of the whole sample. So to say it again, this also takes into account the past regimes, but also the future regimes. So filtered probabilities only look at the past, but the smoothed probabilities in the both directions of the time, future and past. So overall, this left-hand side, this value, this is from the 0.0 to 1. So first of all, we'll see that these regimes are mirror images of each other. So when the one regime is on, the other is not, and the other way around. So overall, it seems that the second regime is more dominating than the first regime, in a sense that it's more often on activated. But yeah, from, for example, here, around a number of 1,500 and 1,800, we'll see that the first regime is on. So this hints that this is regime one is a more volatile, represented more volatile period, and this is the period of the financial crisis. And then there are also other periods where there seems to be more, that are more volatile periods in financial markets overall. So then let's look at the second regime and compare. although it's warning about errors, let's try again if it's wants to print. Well, we are not losing much. It's basically the second regime from the earlier picture, so we are not losing that much. Actually, the first regime of the previous period. So here, you can see the Gen return series, and then there are these gray areas. So these gray areas are the time points when the first regime is activated. So comparing to more, so from here you'll see that when there are more volatile periods, the first regime is activated. And yeah, the regime is activated when the smoothed probability exceeds 1/2. So, although, yeah, just overall, when the smoothed probability is over 1/2, the regime, the gray area is activated here. But we had some problems with our results. So if we look at stats here, we still have an idea that although the second regime is more, it is more usual that the second regime is activated than the first one, the second regime doesn't seem to be that informative. So it doesn't seem to add that much. So let's try something else next. So secondly, let's estimate the similar model as earlier, but here we are only using as a intercept. So if we are looking at this linear regression here, earlier we had British pound euro returns as a independent variable, so we've excluded that and we're only using as an intercept as an independent variable. So as we have one parameter less in the model, we're only specifying three SV conditions here. One from the linear regression, one from the AR1 parameter, plus one. The K parameter here refers that we are also here specifying two regimes. So now, as we excluded euro bound returns from our model, compared to the previous case, we'll see that AR1 length of the